circle had suggested that perhaps I'd do some kind of a reading or say a few things, and that then in the fourth period we can perhaps talk about it in the practice circle. But before I do that, or maybe while I'm doing this, a couple of words about Kinhin. So I know some people here haven't done Kinhin, or the walking form of meditation that we do. And so the Kinhin is walking meditation. So it's a continuation of the sitting practice. In our sitting practice, when we do Zazen, our focus is on our breathing. And when we do Kinhin, the focus moves from the breath to the soles of our feet. But we still stay with the practice, the meditation practice. And the spacing between yourself and the person in front of you is fairly close. So you want to keep it tight, the line fairly tight, focus on the soles of your feet, your hands in this position here while you're doing the walking. You want to stay within the practice. The little gatha for walking, I think the first two lines kind of say it all. It's the first line says, the mind goes in 1,000 different directions, but on this path I walk in peace. So again, it's sort of that sense. And I think that the practice is a practice of trying to find some harmony and peace. It is partially coming back to that sort of balancing. And I would say particularly with this weather that we've been having and with the icy conditions on the street, that Kinhin or mindful walking is something that we naturally do right now. We don't do it all the time. But you see a lot more people doing Kinhin when the snow's on the ground and the ice all over the place than otherwise. And also, I guess, sort of kin driving as well. You've got to be so careful. Everybody who came out here this morning and who, I know some people, fortunately, I live in Montclair, so it's just a short drive. But I know people come from greater distances, and you have to be really, really careful. Mindful practice is a good thing, whether there's ice on the ground or not. But now the consequences of unmindfulness are much more immediate and painful. So I was going to read some excerpts from a book called Branching Streams Flow in the Darkness. It was talks that were given by Sunru Suzuki about the year prior to he died on the Sandokai, or what we refer to as the identity with the relative and absolute, or which is also called the harmony of relative and absolute. But before I do that, I just wanted to talk about one other thing that's come up for me recently. It was a couple of weeks ago I saw an episode of Seinfeld. And in that episode, George and Jerry were having a conversation. And Jerry said something like this to George. He said, George, you have to listen to your little man. You have to listen to your little man. And George looked at him and said, but my little man's an idiot, you know. So, but I'm not sure that George's little man was an idiot, or that George didn't sort of interact with his little man enough. But I thought, for me anyway, the practice, this practice of Zazen and sitting, is sort of that practice of getting in touch with that little man or that little woman or that voice inside you that does provide a certain amount of guidance, but yet which we know sometimes the right thing to do, and then you know what that is, but then you'll try to figure out, rationalize why you should do something else. The other day, someone had come to me, and they were, you know, by practice, I'm an attorney, and so I work in a building with, there's a lot of other lawyers, and another attorney had come to me, and he was thinking about whether or not he should take a particular person on as a client. And so he kind of described the person to me, and he started out by saying, I know this is a shady person, okay? And he kind of gave, you know, the initial reasons why he shouldn't take this person on, but he didn't want to turn away the business. And he was kind of asking me my feelings of whether or not he should dip his toe into the water here and take this person on as a client, even though what I felt was his better instincts were telling him, no, I shouldn't do this. But I figured out reasons why I should, because I don't want to turn away the business. And what do you think? my feelings after he told me this was that I think you should stay away from this person because it's going to be more trouble than it's worth. But the bottom line was I felt that he knew exactly what he should do, and his instincts were telling him stay away from this person, but he was trying to figure out reasons why he should take on this business, and he didn't want to turn away the business. And I think that whether that's in the form of a business or other relationship, we kind of know what probably we should do, but then we try to figure out all reasons, like get around that, or why we should do something other than what our instincts are telling us what to do. And I think that the sitting practice, at least for me, helps me with getting a better handle on what maybe is the right direction to go in. And I kind of know that because I recently had an experience where I felt I should go in one direction, but I deferred to someone who was senior to me in an area, and it turned out the end result on that wasn't so good. And I felt that that was a good lesson. Sometimes it's important to do this practice to quiet down so that you can really listen to yourself and then get greater confidence in following your internal voice. So this book, Branching Streams Flow in the Darkness, there were different essays in here, and as I was going through it, there were three different essays that I thought were really good, but I didn't know which one to read. So what I decided to do is I'm just going to read you a little bit of each one. What this book does is each of the lines in the sutra, or identity, relative, and absolute, are sort of broken down. This was a lecture. These were a series of talks that he gave to students and disciples over 12 weeks in the year prior to his death. And this particular talk was on the lines, "The mind of the great sage of India is intimately transmitted from west to east. While human faculties are sharp or dull, the way has no northern or southern ancestors." The reason I sort of focused in on this line was because of that, what I was talking about earlier, about listening to yourself, and somehow this line about while human faculties are sharp or dull, the way has no northern or southern ancestors, which is somewhat different. That line is somewhat different than the line that we chant when we chant the Sandokai, which is more along the lines of, while there are wise men and fools, the way has no northern or southern ancestors. This doesn't talk about wise people or not. It talks about, while human faculties are sharp or dull, the way has no northern or southern ancestors. What Roshi Suzuki says about this is, quote, "While human faculties are sharp or dull, it is difficult to translate this passage. It refers to the dispute between the northern school and the southern school. The clever ones do not always have an advantage in studying or accepting Buddhism, and it is not always the dull person who has difficulty. A dull person is good because he is dull. The sharp person is good because he is sharp. Even though you compare, you cannot say which is best." And then he goes on to say, "I am not so sharp, so I understand this pretty well. He says, my master always addressed me as, quote, you crooked cucumber. I was his last disciple, but I became the first one because all the good cucumbers ran away. Maybe they were too smart. Anyway, I was not smart enough to run away, so I was caught. For studying Buddhism, my dullness was an advantage. When all the others went away and I was left alone with my master, I was very sad. If I had been a smart fellow, I would have run away too. But I had left home by my own choice. My parents said, you are too young, you should stay here. But I had to go. After leaving my parents, I felt I couldn't go back home. I could have, but I thought I couldn't, so I had nowhere to go. That is one reason why I didn't run away. Another reason was that I wasn't smart enough. A smart person does not always have the advantage, and a dull person is good because he is dull. This is our understanding. Actually, there is no dull person or smart person. Either way, it is not so easy. There is some difficulty for both the smart person and the dull person. For instance, because he is not so smart, the dull person must study hard and read one book over and over again. A smart person forgets quite easily. He may learn quickly, but what he learns may not stay so long. For the dull person, it takes time to remember something. But if he reads it over and over and remembers it, it will not go away so soon. Smart or dull may not make so much difference. The next chapter that I want to read, a little bit about Zazen that I think will kind of blow you away a little bit. This is called A Short Talk During Zazen that the authors decided to include in the book. It isn't necessarily a talk on sutra itself. He says, you should sit with your whole body, your spine, mouth, toes, mudra. Check on your posture during Zazen. Each part of your body should practice Zazen independently. This kind of blew me away. Each part of your body should practice Zazen independently or separately. Your toes should practice Zazen independently, and your mudra should practice Zazen independently, and your spine and your mouth should practice Zazen independently. You should feel each part of your body doing Zazen independently. Each part of your body should participate completely in Zazen. Check to see that each part of your body is doing Zazen independently. This is known as shikantaza. To think, I am doing Zazen, or my body is doing Zazen, is wrong understanding. It is a self-centered idea. Then he goes on to say, the entire universe is doing Zazen in the same way that your body is doing Zazen. When all parts of your body are practicing Zazen, then that is how the whole universe practices Zazen. Each mountain is standing, and each river is flowing independently. All parts of the universe are participating in their practice. The mountain practices independently, the river practices independently. Thus, the whole universe practices independently. Finally, I'm just going to read the concluding remarks in a long talk that was given to a visiting class called We Are Just a Tiny Speck of Big Being. And this was an additional talk on the general spirit of the Sandokai given to his students as well as a group of visiting philosophy students. And one of the interesting things about this book is that at the end of each chapter, there's actually a short discussion, which were questions that different students had that they asked Roshi Suzuki and his response to those questions. So it's kind of neat. So this was a whole talk, and it covered various different aspects of the sutra and also his teachings about different parts of Buddhism and Zen. But he goes on to say, the way to obtain this kind of harmonious life within yourself is by practice. Talking about things is like arranging food on your plate. Every morning our students arrange food beautifully on each dish. But fortunately or unfortunately, when I chew it, it is all mixed up in my mouth, and I just have the taste of food. No color, no beauty, no sesame salt or brown rice. It is even more mixed up when it reaches my tummy. I don't even know what it is. When things are in full activity, there is no idea of good or bad, this or that. It is good to see your food arranged in different dishes. It is good to think about food, your life, or the nature of man and woman. But even if you think about these things, it doesn't mean much unless you really have a taste of them in your life. Unless you chew it up, mix it all together, and swallow it, your life doesn't make much sense. We study Buddhism like this, just as we arrange our food in different dishes and appreciate its color and form. But eventually we must eat it, and then there is no teaching whatsoever. When you actually eat it, there is no teacher or disciple, there is no Buddha or Christ. How to eat is our practice. We are fortunate that even though we chew things up and mix them together, we also know how to analyze them in various ways, and we know what we have been doing. To analyze your psychology or your practice is important, but that is the shadow of your practice, not the practice itself. Thank you.